Carnevale, written and read by Fresney. Rating is mature. Fandom is Twelfth Night Shakespeare. Relationship is Orsino Viola. Additional tags for gender bending and cosplay. This was written for Yuletide 2011 as a Yuletide treat for Random Nexus. Summary. In the time of Carnevale, the good men and women of Illyria were wont to put on masks and take on the costume of other fates. The Duke and Duchess of Illyria were wanton in this custom more than most. On the first morning of Carnevale, as was their custom, Viola and Orsino broke their morning fast in the oak-lined parlor overlooking the sea. Bright clouds raced over the green waves, which were white-chopped and much disturbed by the touch of the wind. Viola felt very much like those waves and would have very much liked to have paced the red carpet. Instead, she kept still to her seat as a duchess should. She looked at her wedded lord from beneath her lashes. He teased at a worn thread in his lush robes. She smiled slightly to see his mood so reflect her own. The wind of the room changed when a servant entered with a tray. As was their custom, it was covered in some 80 pale cakes, topped in glittering sugar. Viola's breath caught in her throat like a bird that beat itself against a window. Her eyes met those of her wedded lord. They both reached out as of a single motion and took up a cake. The servant took the tray and left them to themselves. Viola bit down delicately. She licked her lips clean of sugar. Her careful nibble met with only cake. She swallowed moist, which seemed in that moment dry as a castaway on an unknown shore. She took another bite and found what she was looking for, a small metal object baked into the cake. She rolled it with her tongue inside of her mouth. She tumbled it this way, and she tumbled it that way, as she separated the cake from the metal and swallowed the cake on down. As she looked at Orsino, Viola saw him likewise work carefully at something inside his mouth. Viola pushed the thing with her tongue out through parted lips and into her waiting hand. She held it there a long moment of anticipation and took a look at her fate. It was a figure of a young bravo with all his points all untied and his clothes in a disarray, a sack of wine in his hand, and his purse was heavy at his waist. She swallowed and held it out to Orsino, that he might see. She looked down at what he held in his hand, and felt her breath catch once more, a dozen birds now. His figure was that of a cortegiana, with her bodice open that she might better display her wares. The figure was so well wrought that Viola could see the woman's tongue lick at her lips. Viola licked her lips and set her figure upon the table. Orsino did the same. Viola stole his figure, which she tumbled through her fingers. At his raised eyebrows, she leaned forward for no chaste kiss, which she broke with the words, "I think, my lord, that I will procure a room at the Elephant." He breathed in, and she gave him a saucy wave over her shoulder. She headed to her rooms to set her ladies to work. That night, at the ball to open Carnevale in Illyria, the guests clapped to see their duchess as a cortegiana in a rouged mask. They cheered their duke as her young bravo in a light moustached mask. Valentine, dressed as Harlequin, raised his glass in toast. "Huzzah, your graces!" Sir Toby Belch, also dressed as Harlequin, met this toast double-handed. He had, perhaps, started earlier. Well met, friends. Merry Carnivale! Orsino raised a glass in celebration, but he only drank water. He watched Viola through the holes in his painted mask as she went through the figures of a brawl. She watched him through the holes in her curved mask as he swung Countess Olivia high in the steps of a volte, for all that she wore the wide dress of La Signora. Often they did not look at each other at all. They did not dance together. But when the bell tower struck 10, they slipped away from these lesser revels. They raced down the backway stairs. Anticipation made their steps light as they made their way to the Elephant, where the tap room was already 5 deep. Viola cocked an eyebrow that Orsino could not see. When he went to pay, she said, "I arrange for the room in all its details." Orsino's hand grew unsteady enough to spill a coin on the floor. Viola caught it up. With a look at Orsino, she placed it between her breasts for safekeeping. Up the creaking stairs, then, to the procured room, where a Dutch oven warmed from the wall. For a moment, Viola did no more than let out all those gusty breaths that she had held so long. She laughed and set aside her mask. They set to undo her dress, and with Orsino's help, she slipped from it. The coin slipped to the floor, but was not forgotten. They undid her layers until she stood in naught but her chemise and shivered. With the room so warm, she shivered, not with cold. They set to Orsino's undress until he stood likewise in naught but his shirt. They traded shirt for chemise, solemn as Lent. She wrapped the corset around him and began the business of tightening it. Her index finger darted into the opening along his spine and along the fold of flesh that she was making from the corset's embrace. Each time it was a little caress to the thin lawn of the chemise, accompanied by a jerk of the cord, tightening him still further. "Bend over." Her voice felt already low and rough, as if she'd shouted her pleasures all these hours. He braced himself on the whitewashed wall and stood at an angle. "More." She slid her feet along his and tugged at his hips until he was to her liking. She tightened the corset until he was Spanish slender. All his breathing came high up in his chest, as if it could no longer move out. It couldn't. Orsino stepped into Viola's abandoned farthingale, which Viola buckled about his waist with sharp clicks. Viola dropped a petticoat over the farthingale, as solicitous as any maid. She fastened the dress with its embroidered skirts and false wooden pearls, a courtiana's dress cut away here and there to show what might be purchased for a night. Viola put the fallen coin in Orsino's bodice and smiled as a wolf might smile. "There now, my bond for the night." Orsino slipped on the wig of yellow silk and put on the mask with the painted rouge. Viola painted his lips that they might match the rest, kissed him to smudge those lips as they should be done with her own. She tied on a stiff pointed collar that framed his face in thread of gold, as a halo might do if angels were inclined to rouge. Orsino dressed Viola with quick fingers. She could have done it herself, but she shivered to his tugs and touches. He tied the stiff pointed ruff and hid her throat from view. Orsino was broader in the shoulders, but Viola more than made up for this by the concealment of her chest under the padded doublet. His hands slid up and down her legs until they were encased in tight hose and tied with bright ribbons at the knee. He fastened her codpiece and slipped in some better stuffing. He buckled her sword belt, a swinging pressure on her knee. She put on the cloak herself, which was a flip over her shoulder. She brushed the fingers of a gauntlet under his chin before she put them on. He adjusted her cap with red feathers so that it brushed her cheek if she moved just so. She slipped on black leather boots with raised red heels. He put on slippers that peaked and flashed red under his skirts. They climbed down the creaking stairs. Viola faster now. Orsino walked slower and more carefully. As they came to the street, Viola spun on a booted foot and bowed. She bowed to Orsino. She stepped lightly around him in the figures of a dance or the forms of a fencing circle. It was all the same. She spun around him. He took small steps. If he stepped too quick, the farthingale would ring him like a bell. Instead, he stopped. "You bounce about like a tick on a dog." Viola bowed with an elaborate wave of her cap. "And like a tick, I wish only to couch upon your skin and taste of what lies under." She took his hand in hers. "Your beauty shines even in this dark, dull street." She kissed his index finger at the knuckle, slipped her tongue quick between his index and ring. She whispered into his hand, "I'd sue for greater dominion of these lands." She let go of his hand and bumped his arm with an elbow as a callow youth would. "I'll have you know I'm quite the hardened campaigner." "But my lord," his lashes flickered behind the mask, "I'm an open port. You have but to pay my fee to sail your light barge up my channel." Viola flicked a finger along his masked cheek and took up Orsino's arm. Viola swaggered cock-a-hoop. Orsino took his small, constrained steps and breathed up and out as they pushed their way through the crowded, narrow streets. They found themselves at the Tavern of the Spotted Ram, where Viola scattered coins to pay for drink for every man and woman in the place. The crowd in their merry mood roared. As she did so, Orsino yelled, "You'd best save some of that round coin for me, my lord, or my ring may remain caught in my glove." Masked strangers, close enough to hear the cortiana's words, clapped Viola's back. "You've a merry one there. Best step back and let a more experienced fencer take up with her, to thrust merry ways from her dewlap lips with their swords." Viola shook her head and made the feather tremble. "I may be only a country boy and know only country matters, but, oh, the times I've been a poppin' pear at a lady's request will now stand me in good stead." Viola smacked her lips, and they all laughed some more. A happy crowd on the first night of Carnivale, and ready to make of it what they could. They drank deeply there. All the world felt as if it tumbled on Viola's breath. No, on Orsino's breath, as his chest expanded in no direction but up and down. Viola brushed gloved fingers where his flesh was covered in naught but light lawn at the edge of his bodice. Orsino tapped her masked cheek with a fan and yelled over the noise of the crowd, "Much more of that, and the fields will be plowed, and the horse will be back in the barn before the night grows older yet." A woman with a wild red silk wig and matching mask, her red dress already half open to the hands of the man in whose lap she sat, called out, "All the better, sister. Quick custom leads to widely plowed fields. We flowers fare best when visited by more than one bee." Viola shook her head, the feather in her cap fingering her cheek. "Oh, fair flowers, you prick me with your thorns. When?" She gave Orsino's hand a tug. "All I ask is you give me a chance to prick in fair exchange." The woman leaned back to give the man's long-nosed mask a deeper dive. "Fair trade, sister." Orsino followed Viola out of the door and into the small street to the side of the tavern. The close-built houses leaned over them as if to hide them from the sky. For all that it stank of garbage and all unsavory, Viola leaned against the wall. She said, "Graze on my lips, flower." He kissed her under the shadow of the balcony with the raucous street a few feet away. She said, when they parted lips, "If those hills be dry, stray lower." She quirked her head, "Where the pleasant fountain lies." Viola worked the ties on her codpiece. Orsino sank to the ground. He could not bend from the waist in that corset. Still, He plucked out what he had placed in her codpiece and gave suckle, as if he were the northern wind sucking at the clouds, while his red rouged lips wrapped around wood and not flesh, his fingers strayed higher yet to tangle between her legs. Viola's own fingers slid under his wig and into his hair. They tugged at each other until, laughing, they went to another tavern and tried some variation on their theme. In the wee hours of the morning, with light a thought in the sky, they stumbled back to the elephant where their room waited. Orsino reached to untie his ruff when Viola said, "What, my lady? Do you seek to cheat me? The night is not yet over, and I have yet to claim to the docking at port, for which I have fully paid." Orsino sat down with a heavy creak on the edge of the bed. Viola climbed into his lap until he fell onto his back. She pushed up his skirts and flipped back the willow farthingale rings to press against his bodice. She explored his feet and legs and found, as she made her way, that he could be quite a good steed to ride. She let free her already loosened ties and rode him well, with both cantering and galloping paces, until they were both drenched with the effort. She came to a smooth dismount, but she was not done with him. As his corset held his gasps, she reached the table by the bed where a jar of bear grease waited. He would have squirmed, but she held him down with her thighs. She prepared him in the rearward fashion with finger and stroke, and greased that which he had already sucked earlier that evening. She thrust and twisted with her wrist, even as she held her other hand against his chest. She whispered, "Say my name." He groaned, and she thrust all the harder, until he called out, "Cesario," for which she kissed the name off of him and swallowed it into herself. Finally, beyond spent, they gathered themselves up. It took much longer to change back. There were many stops as Orsino nuzzled her neck, and Viola's hands lingered long over Orsino's corset. There they changed into morning robes, and was their custom, they went to the parlor overlooking the sea. Dark clouds raced over the darker waters. A servant brought in a tray with hot tea and a plate of some 78 small brown cakes. Viola sipped her tea and watched Orsino look at her over the rim of his own cup. When neither of them could wait another moment more, they took up a cake into their hands and mouths. She carefully bit in until she found her prize tumble from her mouth with a quick flick of her tongue. She held up her figure. "My lord, I have the priest." Orsino held up his figure. "While I, my dear father, have the bishop." They set the figures on the table and leaned forward for a kiss of lazily dipped tongues into cake-sweetened mouths. On the table, the little metal bishop stood all astern with his crozier, held as one may hold a crop. The priest knelt on his knees, with his eyes raised as in prayer, and his mouth open as in song. Orsino whispered into the curve of her ear, "Confess," and made address to her lips again. She pulled away, her lashes fluttering down as a fan for her cheek. "Your Excellency, I am an open book." She slipped from her chair to lie down on the window couch, where it overlooked the sea. She blinked at him slowly and held out a hand. He whispered as he looked down at her, "A book well worth the reading." He joined her on the couch, overlooking the changeable waves. They slept curled together under a coverlet of down and silk, while below the water crashed on the shore, and the sun made its hazy way across the winter sky. Later, as she stretched out in the ruins of an abandoned gray chapel, sweating at the abandoned labor of her sins, Viola reflected on the figures to come and adjusted her position that she might better receive the rearward piercing wisdom of her bishop. She cried out, "Christ's mercy," and abandoned herself some more. The end.